It's Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 124, Rister, Reister, Shyster, Meister. Runtime for this episode is 46 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast with no aliens. My name is Jeremy.
Well, I am technically foreign to this state. I'm Tyler.
I'm actually an alien time travel type dude. I probably shouldn't have mentioned that.
An alien time travel type dude.
Yeah, like yes. The doctor.
Okay, well, so what's super effective against that type?
I'm not going to tell you what's super effective against me. Why would I tell you how to kill me?
Doctor type dude? I think they're probably immune to poison. Probably fire? Fire's usually a good bet.
It's fairy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about fairy, because those are natural and time travel is unnatural.
What's your name, Captain Time Travel?
My name is Zach, here from a galaxy far, far away.
Okay.
And a long, long time ago.
Why did you come to the future? Why did you come to the future on Earth?
We don't even have collapsible cups anymore.
We've lost that tech.
You know, studying for a future paper.
It's kind of like a...
In future history class?
Yeah, it's like... Oh man, a field trip. There we go. That's the word I was looking for.
Exactly, but I got separated from my group, which is why I'm still stuck here.
Ah, man, that really is like Doctor Who. There's apparently, a Doctor Who episode for everything, though, so.
Apparently I need to make somebody fall in love with somebody else, and then I'll jump.
Oh, it's like that one show. What's it called? Quantum Jump? Is that
it? Quantum Leap?
That's it. Yep.
I just know the premise of it. I don't actually know anything about the show.
It was on at like 2 a.m. on Sci-Fi for a while, so I caught a couple episodes of it. I'm not sure I liked it that much, but it was an interesting premise. You know what was on in that time slot that was way better?
Gundam?
Actually, there was a Gundam show running at the time, although it was terribly dubbed. Dead Like Me was what I was thinking of.
Oh. So. Never liked Dead Like Me. I've only actually seen the movie.
I don't think I've ever seen anything from Dead Like Me.
You should just watch the first episode, because it's great.
Okay. So, speaking of great, Zach, what haven't you been playing? And then we'll fill in what you have been based on all of that data. It'll be a great experiment.
Well, I haven't been playing Payday. I haven't been playing...
Go. Chess.
Go or chess.
Okay. We got 3 off the list of several 100,000, so let's keep going.
I haven't been playing Smash Brothers. I haven't been playing StarCraft, although I feel I should be.
Okay. Based on that data, I'm going to predict that you've been playing League of Legends.
Wow, it's like you're some kind of freaking psychic.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's actually science, Zach. I have this patented algorithm I can use.
I've been playing a lot of League of Legends. I played another game of ranked. Me and Kevin duoed.
Are you close to getting all your ranked games in time for season end?
I've got 3 more that I need to finish. I'm currently 4-3. Although this game did end up with a new phrase being coined. You can't carry that stupid. It is impossible to carry that much stupid.
So that's what's wrong with CLG. They have Xmithie.
Yeah. Something like that. We lost that one. I played a really good game this week on Twitch, actually, before we started recording. I ended up 6-0-4.
Twitch is fun.
I was pretty happy with myself. I actually started over in Fallout New Vegas because the character that I had been playing was working through a quest line in one of the DLCs that has massive crash problems.
Oh, that's really annoying.
Yeah.
Which DLC? The one where you're like in an underground fighting pit? That's the only one I know.
No, it was a moon-based thing.
Okay.
Wait, there are moon bases in Fallout? How? How did they get to the moon?
Don't worry about it. You're wandering around on this moon, like science facility type of thing. And it has just massive crashing issues. And I eventually just got fed up with it. And I decided I'll just start over.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah, especially because I was pretty high level at that time. A little bit of that, but I've been playing a lot more of the Hyperdimension Neptunia.
I saw that.
It is still freaking amazing. Although I'm saddened I have all 4 of the CPUs now. And it's saddening because I can only use 3 of them at a time. Because it's a 3-person party.
Yeah, that's always kind of lame.
They have a switch mechanic so you can actually partner them up and then switch between 2 of them. So, you can have effectively 6 people in a fight, but only 3 of them are active on the field at any time.
So, like Final Fantasy X?
Yeah, a little bit like that. But each one of them is attached to a different a specific person.
Okay, so, you have 3 slots, and a slot can have 1 of 2 characters in it, basically.
You have 3 slots. Frontline, and then 3 slots backline. And you can switch between the front line and the back line.
Monokemia has a synergy energy that you can consume to switch out in the middle of an attack to keep a combo going. So you can switch through all your characters.
That's kind of like how Agarus sets their things up. But I did a little bit of grinding so that I could beat a boss that I had to take out something before, well, before I had to use my items or skills because it had stuff that would block my items and skill usage in the fight. Ended up winning that one pretty handily because I think I was a little overleveled for the fight. Yeah, I'm into chapter 5. I don't know how many chapters there are, but I think there's a whole host of characters I don't have yet because there's at least achievements for them. I don't know if they're supposed to be DLC characters or what, but they're there.
Although the version you got should have all the DLC if it exists, depending on which one you got. I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't actually know. Because I got it on a Steam sale. I do think that Vert is breast goddess.
That means nothing to me, but I'm sure it will at some point.
I'm sure she has nice jiggling going on, is yes. My interpretation.
She's the 360.
That she would be...
CPU.
My interpretation is that she would be right at home in some sort of beach volleyball game.
Probably.
360 CPU?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, the game is set up around the idea of, like, the four... Like, there are four nations in this, like, region of called game industry.
Oh,
that's actually what it's called.
That's great.
And the three main cities are Leanbox, the four main cities. One's Planeptune, which I don't know what that's supposed to be attributed to. Last Station with CPU Blackheart. Louis.
I'm disappointed they didn't just call it Wee.
That's fairly obvious with Whiteheart. And then the last one is Leanbox with Greenheart.
What was the first one called again?
Planeptune with Neptune.
Yeah, I mean, that
it's
has to be
Purple Heart.
C, but...
Maybe. I mean, that's the main character, which
maybe
is why
Japan
the book
has
is...
a console we've never heard about that just never made it to America.
They have plenty. The Wonder Swan is my favorite.
The game is actually quite a bit of fun. I would recommend it to both of you guys.
I own it. It's on my list. It's on my top 10 list of games to play right now.
Oh,
so.
Nice.
It's on my list as well to mooch off Tyler, since I have
true.
Access to all of his powers. I'm going to play Persona 4 first. I don't think I'm going to regret that, but who knows? Oh,
no, like, I really like the game, but I'm not saying drop everything and play it now. I'm still working my way through it, obviously.
Anything else, Zach?
I have a cardboard box story. I am so happy about this. A while back, I bought a pair of pants.
Good job.
Actually, I bought two
You're
pairs
an adult.
Of pants.
Man, that's the first one you've ever worn for this podcast. In fact, I notice now that you're in fact wearing pants, which is a change of pace, so.
Usually I get here first, so I change... Or I take them off before you get here. So.
Even when we record at your house, Tyler, he's usually there first.
Well, that explains a lot. I had attributed that to a poltergeist.
That's what she said.
I lost one of these two pairs of pants. And today I found it.
In a cardboard box?
It was in a cardboard box at the foot of the stairs in my basement. A box I walk past every day.
Well, it's innocuous. Why would you even look at it? It's a cardboard box.
So I walked past it every day for almost a year. That I haven't known where these pants are, and I finally found them, and I am super duper happy, and I do not care that this is completely irrelevant to the podcast.
Well, so that proves Ocelot was wrong, and the cardboard box is in fact the pinnacle of sneaking technology.
It was also under a plastic bin.
Oh, a plastic bin and a cardboard box?
They were tag
teaming. Combined?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that causes a black hole or something.
It was to keep my very nice oversized pants hidden from me. They're actually too big for me. But I got them on sale, so.
Good job.
Definitely an adult.
Much clothing.
They're lounge around the house
Max
pants.
Max style.
They don't need to be able to actually fit. Just need to stay up for enough for me to move from one sitting position to a different sitting position.
Or you could buy a belt.
No, they're like sweatpants. So a belt wouldn't really help a lot.
But they'd be good for snowboarding?
Probably.
So. Zachary Schaefer versus
fatter.
Rob Haywood.
Well, that dovetails pretty nicely into what I've been playing, which is Metal Gear Solid 5. Metal Gear Solid 5 is the story of a small business owner who's about to be audited and unfortunately falls into a coma for 9 years. And then when he wakes up 9 years later, his business partner is trying to keep the business afloat, but it just hasn't been working out with him. And so they have to team up to make the greatest private mercenary force of all time together. Mostly by recruiting Russians in Afghanistan via knocking them out, attaching parachutes to them, sending them to the sky, grabbing them and telling them that they now work for you.
That's not really recruiting, or I don't think that falls under standard hiring practices.
It's kind of kidnapping.
Yeah, most of us describe that as kidnapping, not hiring.
Yeah, but it's Afghanistan in 1984, and they had some weird laws.
Although, to be fair, they are hiring them by moving them up into the air.
And most of them are very willing to join you for some reason. Occasionally you have to throw a guy in the brig, but for the most part they're like, yeah.
Has that got anything to do with the fact that you're on an offshore oil rig with a bunch of people that are very heavily armed and look very unpleasant?
Yeah, but you start with like three guys who are armed and unpleasant. And then you have to parachute more armed unpleasant people to your base to point guns at the new guys you're bringing in.
So this thing is just full of armed and unpleasant individuals. Man, I can't wait to go over there.
But they all salute you as soon as you come up to you and they say, oh, thanks for coming in, boss, and their morale raises. And if you punch them, they thank you for it.
You know what this is called?
Stockholm Syndrome.
Thank you, Tyler. They don't actually like you. They just have convinced themselves through the time frame of them being kidnapped that they like you.
Also, they're all masochistic, which is why they like being punched by Snake.
I have like 80 of them, though. If they wanted to revolt, they would have the advantage.
They don't even know.
Stockholm Syndrome. They don't know. They don't know which one of them is actually not loyal. But what they don't realize is that none of them are actually loyal to you, but they assume that everybody else is.
And
so they
can
never actually
it
get it together.
Because Snake instituted a behind-the-scenes policy of instantaneous murder.
Actually, I'm never there. Miller does all that. I'm out doing all of the mercenary work.
So what is the point of recruiting people to your awesome military forces?
They do R&D for me. Including developing new cardboard boxes for me to sneak with different camo patterns. And also better shotguns, sniper rifles, grenades.
Wait, so you go get
That's ancillary. They produce more and different cardboard boxes.
Yes.
You got these guys who are, like, trained combatants, and you're having them do R&D?
They have different stats, one of which is R&D, one of which is combat, but I can't make a combat squad yet. I assume I'll be able to, eventually. Also, some of them are in the support chopper, and I did have one mission that went horribly, horribly wrong, because I accidentally exploded my C4 instead of placing more C4, and the answer was call in gunship, watch everyone die.
That sounds like the perfect option for a stealth operative.
Yeah.
No, makes perfect sense.
Snake is less about stealth and more about getting the job done. If he can do it without being shot out, that's just convenient.
Especially this Snake. There's a pretty large point bonus for not killing anybody on a level, but it seems a lot less penalizing for kills in this game. It's still best to grab people because, one, you can extract them and hire them if you don't lethal them, and also you can interrogate them, which is actually really useful.
I'm in your base stealing your dudes.
Yes, exactly. And it's great is when someone else sees you stealing your dude, like, oh my god, someone just got pulled up by a parachute. I'm going to investigate.
I'm picturing like the commander of a base going, where's all my guys?
I had a mission where I had to kill 3 Soviet officers before they could meet. I got the first 2 before they made it to the meeting area, but the 3rd one made it. So I was trying to sneak in. I didn't know where on the base he was, and I found a guy who had a really good intel stat, and I had just started my intel division, so I wanted him. So I pull him up by parachute, and someone sees him like, ah, crap, that guy saw it. And then so I shoot him, and it's like, oh, yeah, Snake, that was the 3rd target. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, well, yoink, he's ours now.
The guy that you stole was the 3rd target?
Yes.
Nice. It's always great when you run into something like that where you accidentally do something.
Last week, I described it as a mixture between Skyrim, Call of Duty, and Arkham. I think it's more XCOM, Call of Duty, and Arkham, especially with the base mechanics, because it's very similar. You go, you have them, you upgrade your bases, you have different offshore oil platforms for each team, you have them develop weapons for you, and ostensibly eventually for them.
So, is there any reason it's an oil platform other than that's a convenient thing that's offshore?
I think it's a convenient thing that's offshore and out of the way.
I don't even actually think it's an oil platform. But okay. I think of it as an offshore oil platform, because that's what it looks like.
What else would be offshore?
Just
apparently a platform.
A military base? A private mercenary base?
A platform that is not oil.
So it's a lot of fun. The open world elements are actually really engaging. It's fun to just sneak into bases, grab supplies and blueprints, and rescue prisoners. Sometimes missions will just be sprung on you. In particular, there was a sniper out in the wild, and one of the missions was a sniper duel, and she just started shooting me. So
whoa,
I got into a random sniper duel mission that was pretty fun. My sniper rifle kind of sucks, but at least I had it on me.
Yeah, although it would have been really inconvenient if you had not. Although I wonder if the mission could have been triggered if you hadn't.
I think intentionally there was a super good point for supply drops right where the mission started. I think that was intentional.
Okay.
And in fact, I called one in because my sniper rifle was low on ammo.
Well, you know what the answer there is, Tyler. If you don't have your sniper rifle on you, and you get stuck in a sniper duel. No, and you get stuck in a sniper duel without your sniper rifle.
Grenade
the
launcher?
Answer is... gunship.
I don't think I could have called
there's
the gunship.
No
I didn't try.
There's no such kill like overkill.
I would have said you could just, like, slowly sneak towards their location and assassinate them while they're looking in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and this, my way's quicker.
This sniper had magic invisibility powers, and I assume she would have activated them if I called the chopper, but I don't know.
You have enough Hellfire missiles to blanket a square mile. She's not getting away from that.
Actually, Mabel. I just unlocked missiles. I just unlocked the ability for actual airstrikes before I could just call in a gunship.
To be fair, missiles are really expensive. So.
Yeah, also that. It costs a lot of money to call in an airstrike. Like I said, small business. You got to run in the red.
Well, you know what you're not going to be doing any of if you lose the sniper duel because you don't have a weapon that will work in it.
Yeah, it's true. But again, I could have just called a sniper rifle right behind me. If I hadn't developed a sniper rifle yet, that would have been a problem.
My way is more effective and a little louder.
Otacon, yeah. What's this weird technology? It's like a bullet that shoots really far.
And some kind of spyglass attached to the top of a gun.
Now, it's 1984, so you don't have things like that. You just have your iDroid to call in airstrikes and place things on your GPS.
That doesn't exist yet.
We had GPS back in the 80s. It wasn't civilian tech.
Also, but Metal Gear is, like, canonically about 10 years ahead of current technology. We didn't have that in 1994 either, mind you, but it is sort of consistent. There have been, like, three different nuclear war mechs built at this point in Metal Gear canon. I can't think of any other Metal Gear stories. It's one of those games that, since it's so open world, is really good for emergent gameplay and stories like that.
Listening to you talk about it makes me want to play, because I would be really into wandering up to a random base and just stealing supplies and leaving.
Yeah,
so
it's fun.
I'm kind of the same way when I play open world games. I always like doing stuff like that, just wandering around and finding stuff.
Well, that's one of the best part about Elder Scrolls games. Hey, look, there's an ancient temple here. I'm going to go explore that. Well, my problem is there's so many.
That's what I was doing for a long time in Oblivion, is I was like, I'm going to walk from one end of the map to the other, and I'm going to explore every cave I come across. I got maybe two from the bottom city to the next city up before I went, oh god, I'm never going to finish this.
There's just so many of them. That actually kind of explains why so many people work on the Elder Scrolls games, though, because you have to have a team of like three people to design a cave, and there's like a billion caves. You can only design them so quickly.
And you can only copy-paste so many of them.
Exactly, because eventually you'll start noticing.
One of the few problems with Metal Gear 5 is that exploration element, though, because all there really is to find are Russian outposts, and there aren't actually that many. There are enough to keep it fun and satisfying, especially since when you interrogate guards, they'll tell you, oh, hey, you want blueprints? Oh, hey, we have this prisoner who's super good at this, and then you get side missions in those, but you end up visiting the same bases two or three times, generally.
That's unfortunate.
Like, actually the same base?
Yeah, actually the same
base.
I don't think there are any bases that are, like, copy-paste, other than there are, like, guard outposts. There are, like, one tower and a tent, but
but that's a actually believable copy-paste feature. So.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's really good, and I will loan it to you when I'm done, Tyler, if you like. I got it for 360.
Yeah, and I have one of those. I didn't know it came out on 360. Is 360 still a current-gen console? No,
no,
Xbox
technically
One.
Speaking, it's last-gen.
But this game has been in development for a long time.
Okay.
So it was quad-release on PS3, PS4. Xbox One, Xbox 360.
I think it was actually 5. I think it was Penta release.
PC as well.
Because PC was
Yeah,
also
I forgot
there.
About PC, but it was definitely on PC.
To be fair, like, they're all
on Steam.
Pretty much all games are developed on a PC, and then you just compile it for a specific platform, so it's silly not to release it on PC as well.
As far as Last Hurrahs go, for this is probably Konami's, and it's pretty good. Metal Gear, there will be more games. Konami's going to license it out. But this is a really nice bow out. It's probably the best Metal Gear game.
Why are they ducking out again?
Out of video games?
Not enough profit. There's more money in gambling.
And they can just license their games out. For example, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, like I said, was made by Platinum, who made Bayonetta, and Konami just took a share. So they can have other companies make video games with their characters and properties and still see profit.
It's basically no risk to them. They still make money on it. The problem with actually making games is that if your game flops, you're out all that dev money, and Konami doesn't have time for that.
And especially with HD graphics, game production costs have skyrocketed. It's a lot more risk than it used to be.
Well, that's why a lot of the like free to play games that are operating on the like the freemium, I guess would be the best way to put it, model, where you have to pay for certain content, like League does. You don't actually have to pay anything to play the game, but certain content does require real money.
Some of that too, though, is it's a lot easier to sell that in China, which is a gigantic market, because China has cultural group has to approve video games to be sold in China, but those sorts of games aren't technically sold, so you can get around that.
Oh.
Not to mention, a lot of people in China are poor as crap, so if you only have to pay like $1 to get another 5 hours of content, well, suddenly that's entertainment that you can otherwise afford.
So what have you been able to afford to entertain you, Tyler?
Well, I'm an engineer, so probably far too much.
Time is a cost, too.
That is true. I've been playing a fair amount of Splatoon. I finally made it back up to A rank. I switched over to a roller for a while, which was actually a lot of fun. They released one that has my favorite sub-weapon, which is a Seeker.
Is that like a missile or something?
No, I described it before as kind of like an automatically homing remote
RCXD?
Control. Yes, thank you. I forgot what it was called.
Okay.
The special on that, though, is you get an infinite number of them for a small period of time. So you can just kind of spam a hallway with an infinite number of them.
Someone walks around the corner and there's just a whole...
Yeah, an army of them flying at you. They do explode after a certain distance, but it's so ludicrously long that you can't reliably hit anything at that distance.
One of my favorite things was always controlling the RCXDs and driving them around.
These work as a replacement for a grenade, so you don't really have a huge amount of time to control or finally manipulate their motion.
There's always that the fun effect of whenever somebody spotted one of those things driving around and everyone started immediately backing
Bail!
Away from it and you could see it. Oh god, 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 boom.
What else have I been playing? I've continued my Nuzlocke run. I caught an Eevee as one of my...
Where are you going to make it?
Nice.
I don't know. It's
Espeon,
not...
Espeon, Espeon, Espeon.
Or Sylveon. I don't have a fairy type, and I have had multiple occasions where that would be useful.
You really need... I feel like fairies aren't actually useful in the main game.
Sylveon
not
specifically
really.
Has a really high special attack and a pretty
That's
wide
true.
Move pool.
There isn't a fighting gem, right? There's no one who really uses dragons.
But they're immune to poison, which is nice. And
but there's not really any poison things.
Oh, yeah, no, other way
also,
around.
Also, there are no poison things.
That is true. I don't know. I've had a couple of situations where fairy would have been useful, but I can't even remember what they are anymore.
Because fairy is only really, what is it, strong against...
Anti-dragon.
It's strong against dragon, and then there's like...
Fighting and...
Dark.
Dark, yeah. It's very much a balanced Pokemon. They put it in to be weak to the things that needed to be stronger, and strong against the things that needed to be weaker. But that's really for competitive battling, and you don't see many of those types just playing the game.
I actually had a Meryl in my party for a while before I realized that it isn't a strong enough fairy type to have in my party, and I had another water type, so I ditched it.
I feel like Azumarill is pretty good, though. With
it's
Play
a good
Rough
tank.
And Aqua
well,
Jet.
It also doesn't learn Play Rough until level 57 as Azumarill. They lowered that in Omega and Alpha. It got replaced by Cubone.
Cubone's good, too. It's decent.
And I didn't have a ground type. So, that was nice. What else did I replace? Oh, I got a Drifloon.
Yay.
So, I replaced my Pidgeotto and some other Farfetch'd with a Drifloon. And I have a Bunnelby, a Diggersby. I forget what the evolution is.
Bunnelby is the second one.
Yeah, Bunnelby is the initial.
But I have what is just recently a Diggersby as an HM slave. And also, a Bulbasaur I have named Sparrow, as an inside joke to myself. So.
Good job, you. Haha. Anything else?
I also, remarkably enough, played a little bit of Sonic 2.
To compare to this week's assignment?
Partially, yes.
Which was Ristar, the proof that Sonic Team never had any talent and got completely lucky with Sonic 2.
I want to go back to my original definition of what Ristar is, so I don't actually have to acknowledge this game as existing.
It's not that bad. Certainly, there's no question about why 2012 Ristar isn't hanging around, but it's not that bad.
I have a question as to why 2012 Sonic is hanging around, so...
Nostalgia? Have you seen the Sonic Boom cartoon and designs?
They made a cartoon?
This
year.
Seriously, a cartoon for that?
Right now. Oh my god.
You saw the Knuckles versus DK one, right?
Yeah, where great, where they used
Knuckles
the oh-no sound effect.
Well, no, apparently, with new character designs, Skip's leg day.
That was also
that.
A good joke. They used, from Sonic 08, the sound effect where you first fight Knuckles. Every time he gets hit, he goes, oh no.
Yeah, I did see it, but...
But that's where that came from. I love it when he just, like, gets hit in the face repeatedly, and he's like, oh no, oh no, oh no.
You'd think with all the characters in Sonic, Ristar would just show up, right?
He's a little bit out of character design, because all those are anthropomorphic animals.
And he's a star.
Yeah, and he's a star
Nights into Dreams would make more sense to show up in the Sonic universe.
Yeah, where's Nights?
That would make a lot of sense, too. I was going to say Ristar might have inspired Knuckles, but it looks like Ristar came out 2 years after Knuckles, so that's not true. So Ristar plays kind of like Knuckles from the later Sonic games we haven't played yet, where he's about verticality. But unlike Knuckles, who sort of sticks in walls and climbs him, you extend your arms, and you can extend your arms up to climb or to pull yourself to things or to pull yourself to enemies to hit them. In fact, stretch arms is actually the only verb in Ristar.
Also jump. You can jump.
Okay, you can jump. But, man, I think a lot of why the Sega Genesis was so bad was that three-button controller. They really needed that six-button controller they'd eventually come out with, but that was unsupported because no one wanted to alienate people.
I had both of those controllers, and on one game that me and my brother played, the six-button controller, the three like XYZ buttons controlled just doing the special moves.
Oh, that's nice. So just quick mapping.
Yeah, the six-button controller was introduced when Street Fighter showed up on the console because you can't do Street Fighter with three buttons.
They did Street Fighter on Genesis?
Yeah, eventually.
I did not know that.
Street Fighter on everything. I mean, it's not Resident Evil 4, but...
My
quite to that level.
With that argument, though, is that almost all games we played on the Genesis only used two of the three buttons anyway. They couldn't come up with a third action for you to perform. Imagine if one of the early Sonic games had that third action mapped to Spin Dash or something.
Yeah, ugh. Just not much going on. So Ristar is a platformer, but there aren't really pits that you can fall into and die.
It's kind of like the first levels of Sonic. If you fall down, it's just an alternate route.
Also, the enemies are not very good. They tend to blend in with the background, kind of. They're not visually very interesting.
Some of them have hitboxes much larger than it really seems like they ought to have, which is kind of a problem. That's a common Genesis problem.
Yeah, there are orbs.
Most
orbs
of them
are common. There are some chickens. There are some vultures.
Later you get seahorses.
None of them are really well themed.
None of them made a whole lot of sense. There's a snake that you fight at one point.
The story, in air quotes, of Ristar is that you're an alien who's going to different planets fighting an evil empire, but the enemies don't really have a feel to them or a look.
It looks like you're just roughing up local fauna.
Yeah, and like Mario fights evil mushrooms and turtles, and it still has more of a feel of conflict.
I think the little orb guys are actually supposed to be the direct minions of the evil overlord thing, and everything else is just incidental. But the orb guys are easily the worst enemies. They don't do anything. They're small. They're not challenging to overcome.
Well, that's why they're minions.
They aren't visually interesting, and they're not mechanically interesting either.
Exactly.
And same with the bosses. They're just like random animals that have turned evil. First one is like this weird flying lizard wizard.
I think it's supposed to be like
a
tribe chieftain or something, but
it's some sort of green reptilish.
He turns purple.
Bearded thing. Then there's an evil hammerhead shark, which is a little more interesting, but still kind of random. What's the third boss?
The drill monster, I think you said. I didn't actually get that far, but
I guess I only played three bosses. I thought it was four. The third one is like this armadillo that drills down. That fight's a lot more interesting because it's more staged. He has a thing where he's attacking you and you have to dodge his attacks and then grab him, and then you go to stages where you're falling down and have to avoid him in midair and grab him midair to go to the next.
That actually sounds kind of neat.
It doesn't work very well in practice, though, because you're falling so fast you can't really see him when he shows up on screen.
Okay.
And there's not a very good way to avoid his attacks. Also, Ristar always stays in the middle of the screen.
And he's small.
Which is kind of typical for a platformer, but a lot of times you're moving so fast that enemies will show up in front of you before you can react. Especially on water levels, where your breaststroke is very, very fast, which is good in contrast to Mario's, like, pathetic little hibba-hibbas. But it's not cool that your options are slow as balls or rocket my face into this enemy spike.
Well, and you can't attack while you're in the middle of a breaststroke dash, which, so it's, do I want mobility or do I want to not die, is really the option you have there. So you always choose the not die option.
You sure about that? Because it seems like you still run into things no matter if you choose the not-die option.
That depends on how quickly you can stretch your arms. To its credit, I love the animation when he stretches his arms out all the way and he, like, wiggles his fingers from exertion for a little bit.
It's a cool kind of gimmick. It's an interesting idea, but it seems like they didn't do a very good job of building a game around it. There are some cool parts where you'll be in midair and you have to grab sort of poles that are in front of you and pull yourself to them and vault to the next one. And if the game was all that, it might be really fun, but
they didn't really design any of the enemies to interact well with the mechanic. There are some enemies that you can grab onto and fly around with them for a while, but I would have liked to see something like Mischief Maker did, where you can pick up enemies and use them as projectiles, or even Mario, but it makes more sense with the extendo arms. But almost all the enemies become immediately stationary when you grab them, making it useless to have grabbed them in the first place.
It does really seem like they designed the movement mechanics and how you interact with the world with the stretchy arms, and then went, we should probably put some enemies in here somewhere.
I agree. Enemies seem like an afterthought, because the actual movement mechanics around the world are pretty decent. You can abuse the fact that you can grab stuff and gain momentum to move places, and they recognize that and put treasures redefined in those places.
It would actually make more sense to me to have very little enemies on screen at any one time or anything like that, and instead have it be mostly about dodging falling down pits, because it seems like you can use
terrain.
Yeah, navigating terrain and stuff like that being the actual challenge, whereas right now the challenge is avoiding the enemies, but the enemies are kind of
they're not
pathetic.
Challenging. They're just a waste of time. And they constantly respawn.
Usually you'll get damaged because you didn't see them.
I think that's actually a pretty good point. And actually what I think they should have done, there aren't really pits you fall down into and die in this game. And so that is also part of the problem with the challenge. I think it should have taken a page from games that would come out a year later. And to its credit, it's not like it could have predicted this. But games like Mario 64 and Banjo-Kazooie and those 3D platformers, and they should have made it about exploring, about trying to find different exits, about using these climbing powers to try to get to cool places.
And maybe changing the way you climb over the course of the game, or interact with your hand-grabby powers.
Giving you additional things that you can do to grab onto things, maybe a longer extension, or maybe a swing that you can just utilize instead of having to grab onto those weird levers that appear in given things. Yeah.
I was going to say, to its detriment, Metroid existed before this game came out, and that's basically the 2D equivalent of one of the 3D platformers.
True, and a more Metroid-like game might have been good. Although I think one that was still staged would be all right.
Yeah, but that would be fine, but exploring is not rewarding enough, and you never change your mechanics for the course of, what, 8 levels? Or
there are
8
only
worlds?
5 worlds that I think have 3 levels each, maybe 2 levels and a boss.
It's too many without enough variation, I think is the
You need
big
to change
problem.
Up the mechanics pretty quick, which is why I think the second level went with the water level theming instead of having something else, but honestly, who likes a water level?
Well,
it was not bad compared to a lot of platformers' water levels, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, it's not bad compared to other water levels. It still doesn't make it a good idea.
Yeah, I think the water level is okay. My problem with it more was then you start running into a lot of Zelda-esque blocks where you have to kill all the enemies in the room to move on, and it's not really clear all the time that's what you're supposed to do.
There was one of them where you had to follow an enemy around in a circle and wait for it to get near the thing that you have to go through and kill it there, because otherwise it doesn't unlock unless you kill it at that spot. That was kind of stupid. They do start introducing some kind of amusing puzzle mechanics, at least in the third world, where you have to carry this statue around and use it to trigger traps for you.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of interesting. You basically have a weight that you have to throw in front of you to activate fire and cage traps so that they don't fall on you. But then, did you get to the, I don't want to say boss, but, the enemies that are poking their eyes out in a certain order, and you have to kill them in the order that they...
Yeah.
Because that's almost a puzzle, but it's really unsatisfying. It's really hard to get past enemies without killing them, so getting to the ones is hard, and it's really just a Simon Says memorization game.
There's a memory puzzle thing
memory
in there?
Enemy.
It's not actually any worse than, Towers of Hanoi, but it's because I think they were really struggling to make this game interesting and change things up. I think they knew, as game designers, that this game had gotten old, but they'd put so much work into it, they couldn't just abandon it, and they didn't have better ideas.
Towers of Hanoi doesn't typically kill you trying to complete it.
Yeah, but you could make an enemy that does. It would be a weird enemy, but you could.
Sounds like a boss fight from Zelda.
Yeah, it kind of does, actually. I actually like the idea of having Sonic's acceleration and high speed with the grabbing mechanics, because you can't do a lot as Sonic in midair. And you can't do a lot on the ground as Rystar, but however you say his name. But being able to run really fast and jump and say, oh, I mistimed that jump, but there's a thing I can grab and you can spin off of it would be really fun.
What I really want, I think, from this is a Tarzan game, where you're flying through the air, grabbing things, flinging yourself.
That would actually be pretty decent.
And yeah, if you combine that with Sonic's ground speed, that could be a real interesting game.
At the very least, it would make the core mechanics more fun, and you wouldn't need to vary it up as frequently. But as Zach said, it feels like they needed to make the second level a water level immediately because already the first world got bland. I don't know.
Like I said, I was bored after level one. I beat the first level boss. I wasn't entirely certain what I was doing during the first level boss.
Oh, yeah. Have we discussed how you beat the first boss? Because this is terrible enemy design.
To be fair, I figured it out right away, and I did think it was pretty bad. You just grab the bottom of him and you...
I had to get hit by his hurricane things, and then you break out of them. Without pushing buttons, you just break out of them, and then you can grab the guy that hops off his back.
That's how I ended up killing him.
Oh, I just kept grabbing the bottom of him, and then the guy off and his back falls off.
He looked invincible, so I didn't even try grabbing him, so instead I got hit by hurricane.
Okay, yes, then I'll agree this is bad design.
I dodged it. I kept jumping into him, or the couple times I jumped into him, he didn't seem to react to being hit. I tried to keep dodging it, and I'm like, until I figured out what happened, and then I managed to grab the dude that fell, that jumps off and attacks you, and beat him that way.
Playing devil's advocate just for a moment, that means there are two different strategies you can use to beat him, and that actually is kind of interesting and might be good design.
The problem is neither is intuitive.
And neither one really shows that you're doing damage.
But I think that's the entire problem with this game, is neither, the whole game is kind of unintuitive. And you said you were bored after the first level, Zach, but to be blunt, I was bored after the first, like, kind of thing you climb with the, on the ladder. This game didn't grab me at all, and I think that actually might be its greatest sin, is it just doesn't engage you. There's no story to speak of. The character is, I don't want to say too uncanny valley, because he's not really, but he's... He's a weird star alien. Like, Mario's a
He's unrelated.
You want the dude to get to the princess on an instinctual
He's
level.
A little bit too far away. Like, is it Mario? He's a plumber. He's going for the princess. Whatever. Sonic, even? Like, yes, Sonic is a little bit far out there.
But he's got shoes. And, like, that's a really weird thing.
Yeah, he's got nice shoes. I was going to say he's got a partner, because my first game was Sonic, too.
And when Sonic kills a evil robot, a little animal comes out and is freed.
Yeah, and, like, there's buy-in there. But this guy doesn't really look like you're doing anything, helping anybody, like,
to contrast,
I'm not entirely
that,
certain what's going on.
I actually watched the full intro of this game, which was a little bit slowly paced because I can read text faster than a 5-year-old. But I loved the art style almost immediately. I really like the hand grab mechanic, even if they don't use it well enough. There was, in the first level, a portion where there were three vertical columns, and I used that, I'm like, oh, I bet I can gain height with this if I just change the direction I'm grabbing really quick. And immediately, it's like, hey, here's a treasure chest. I'm like, treasure chest? Unfortunately, there was never anything interesting in them.
Oh, that's another good point. The treasure chests sometimes have health, and that's pretty interesting. But for the most part, they just give you points. And I'm sorry, Sega, it's 1995.
And at the end of three levels, it counts up your secrets score, which is kind of satisfying, except you have no idea what it's out of, so you don't know how many of them you found.
Zach was complaining when we played Donkey Kong Country about all the collectibles, like the Kong and everything. I think that would give this game more of a hook, because if treasure chests, even if it was such a minor thing, gave you something to work towards, that would make them a lot more interesting.
Rather than just finding a single health up.
Or points. Woo.
Yeah, some of them are just
I forgot points were a thing.
That's
in this game.
I was actually going to contrast this with Donkey Kong Country, because the secrets in Donkey Kong Country are better, but almost similarly dissatisfying, because extra lives, woo. The game's not hard enough to really warrant them. You're never going to get a game over, and if you do, there's save points everywhere. This game, at least, while generous with lives and continues, doesn't have a save mechanic, but points don't give you more lives, so why are you even trying to collect them? To get a high score on your Genesis?
Because there might be health in there instead of points.
That is true, but I was looking forward to, like, finding equipment or something.
Yeah.
Fast shoes, a shield.
Yeah, even, like, Sonic-style power-ups.
Yeah,
that
this game had no power-ups. That's a good point. I didn't really consider it, but that could have added a hook.
Yeah, because I saw the treasure chest and was like, that's got to have something interesting in it. Nope, just a health up.
I just find it bizarre that they had such potential to make these mechanics interesting, and they're just not... This is the same problem with Sonic. There are potentially interesting mechanics, but the level design and really enemy design, I think, is the big problem in both of these. Do not reinforce utilization of the cool mechanics.
And you talked about liking the art. To be honest, I kind of don't. Now, I'm the sort of guy who will complain all day these days about how brown and gunmetal are the only colors allowed in video games, but this game actually has the opposite problem. It's only using bright colors, and there's not enough contrast. Especially enemies and stuff seems to just kind of meld into the background.
Enemies are the biggest problem, definitely.
I walked into so many guys because I didn't even see them.
My biggest problem was also, like, there are thorny bushes, which, one, don't immediately look like they're going to damage you the first time you see them. They're, like, on a wall, and you're like, oh, that's something that can... Nope, you can't climb those. They also have hitboxes way larger than it looks like they should, and they're like static environment. It's not like you can say, oh, I guess we must have both been moving. That's static environment.
Is there anything else we want to say about Ristar before we put it on the list? I really don't like it. I found it immediately boring. I got the farthest out of all of us in it, which is kind of odd, but...
Not that surprising. I forgot it existed and played it before we recorded.
I did not give it enough time. I was playing it on the little things Alex got us for Christmas.
Yeah.
And accidentally reset it while it was in my pocket.
Hey, so did I, actually.
So, I'm like, well, I must be done with that for now, but I might actually go play more of it.
I found out the charger's actually a USB cable. Who knew?
Yeah, it's a mini instead of a micro.
Oh, what was I going to say?
It is currently plugged into my computer charging.
This is actually the first time in the history of this podcast that I forgot what game we were supposed to play.
Really? Because
yeah.
I've done that at least 6 or 7 times.
Well, yeah,
this
Zach asks me all the time.
This is the first time I've forgotten Okay, yeah, I forget all the time.
I did actually forget this one because I had to go listen to the last episode and find out what game I chose.
That's what I did, too.
I typically find out on Monday and ask Jeremy.
Except today, where you asked me this morning. No, you just asked me what system it was on.
Yes, that's I remembered what it was for. I remembered what the game was.
So this game, not very memorable and not very good. Speaking of games that aren't memorable and good, we have a list of all the video games we've played on our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Some are memorable and good.
But ones that aren't are ones like Space Harrier, which is at the bottom.
That's actually really memorable, but because it's so bad. So.
A lot of people really like that game, and I think maybe we should try to track down the arcade version and see if it's better.
Should track down somebody who likes this game and ask them...
Yeah, try to convince us, please.
Why? Although it'd be difficult because we probably have to find them in an institution somewhere. And I don't think there's one within easy driving distance.
I think the arcade version must just be a lot better. Really do.
It would have to be because the home console port's garbage.
Was that Master System?
Yeah.
Because it
Master System is also a crap console. Let's
be
honest.
True.
It suffered a lot of hardware problems, and that definitely impacted it negatively for me. But
in the middle is Crazy Taxi, kind of an egg game. And at the top,
that is pretty middle.
Beautiful, wonderful Chrono Trigger.
Prism glasses activate.
Despite Zach not playing one of them, I think we should start by comparing this game to the two by the Sonic team we already have on here. We all agree it's way worse than Sonic 2, right?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
So, Tyler, what do we think of it compared to Sonic the Hedgehog?
Well, I stated this even before we started discussing the game properly. I actually prefer this game to the original Sonic the Hedgehog. I feel like it's got more interesting mechanics. I don't feel like I'm waiting around constantly, even if I'm much slower. And I felt like I was progressing. The hook of stretchy arms and grabbing onto stuff intrigued me a lot more than running fast, especially when you don't get to run fast.
I think Sonic is a better game, though, to be honest. Like I said, it has that sort of connection immediately with when you kill a robot, you get a little animal popping out. Robotnik is a recurring enemy. You know why you want to fight him, because he's the asshole that killed you 10 times on level 1.
And he looks... like a guy you want to fight. I mean,
he has his own theme that comes in.
He's very villainous. Yeah, he's got the big goggles, evil guy mustache.
And why I didn't like Sonic, I never was like, is that enemy or background?
That's very true. Okay, your arguments dissuade me. I will agree to put this above Sonic. Other way around, I guess. Sonic goes above this.
Do we think it's better than Sonic Chaos? I think I do there, because Sonic Chaos had real lag issues.
It had similar background problems.
What's Sonic Chaos?
The one you always forget.
Yeah, the one you always forget.
I would explain why I forgot it.
I think I agree that it's better than Sonic Chaos, because they suffer similar design problems.
What about Sonic 2 for the Master System? And that hang glider?
I actually kind of like Sonic 2 for the Master System, so...
I hate that hang glider.
I think I like the arm stretching more than a hang glider, even in principle. And the arm stretching actually works.
I'll give it that, I actually kind of like Rysar.
I'd take Ristar over...
How are you supposed to pronounce that?
I've been going with Ristar, Ristar, because that is how Ristar is, in my opinion, pronounced in the BattleTech universe. That's what I'm going with.
Only a few above that is Gunstar Heroes for this system.
I prefer Gunstar Heroes massively. So.
Blue Gunstar is Legend of the Mythical Ninja. That had the co-op and the cool Japanese pop culture.
Yeah, I would actually have to give it to Legend of the Mystical Ninja, partially because of co-op and partially because it's you can tell what enemies are.
So the final question becomes, above or below Scat?
I think below Scat, actually.
I think below.
Scat was really mediocre.
But at least we remember it.
As is Rysar. Well, I feel like Rysar
has innovative ideas, though. I mean, I'm outvoted, but I'm going to make a small case.
No, I agree it probably is more innovative. Certainly, I like the ability to drag myself to stuff. And I haven't seen it replicated, really. I feel like some sort of grappling hook would be similar.
Bionic Commando, maybe? We haven't played that.
Give me 15 minutes and I'll have forgotten all about this game.
The problem is, Scat is better implemented, even if it's pretty bland.
All right, so Ristar will go above Sonic 2 for Master System and below Legend of the Mythical Ninja.
I can agree with that. That seems like a good spot for it. I chose poorly. I chose well last time, I think.
What did you choose last time?
Not Rystar?
That doesn't mean it was a good choice.
I think Super C was the last thing you picked.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was you.
No, I picked Super C.
I was R-type.
Okay, so yeah, you did pick okay last time.
Anyway, I chose poorly this week, so my picking again privileges are revoked. Jeremy, what are we playing?
Well, I just realized that we're actually recording these when we're supposed to, and while Spooktoberfest is only beginning for us, for the listeners, Spooktoberfest is nearly over. We haven't played any nearly spooky games.
Castlevania?
Let's do Super Castlevania 4.
Yeah!
Probably the game I'm most looking forward to in any series for this podcast.
I can hardly wait.
I mean, one of the chief complaints about it is it's too easy. So I think that should work well with you. The complaints are it's too easy and it's too much like Castlevania 1. I don't know how you reconcile those two things.
Next time and last time, I want to suck your quarters.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2015. All the games, movies, and other media mentioned in the show are copyright their respective owners, in case that wasn't obvious. Past episodes, articles, and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, we are @ltovg. We can also be found on iTunes. If you wanted to help us out, we would really appreciate if you left us a 5-star review. No extra lives were lost in the recording of this podcast.